for evening patrol. She should probably be equally eager to get going. She still had to steal some food today, enough to satisfy the cult of moments when she approached them later in the evening. That should be easy enough. Vatha had taken to planning operations under Ishna's guidance and was proving quite proficient. Still, she lingered, enjoying Adolin's presence. She wanted to be here with him before it was time to be Vale. She didn't much care for him. Too clean-cut, too oblivious, too expected. She was fine with him as an ally, but wasn't the least bit interested romantically. Shallan held his arm, walking with him. People already moved through the city, cleaning up, more so they could scavenge than out of civic duty. They reminded her of kremlings that emerged after a storm to feast on the plants. Indeed, nearby, ornamental rock buds spat out vines in clusters beside doorways, a splatter of green vines and unfurling leaves set against the brown city canvas. One patch nearby had been struck and burned away by the Everstorm's red lightning.
"I need to show you the Impossible Falls sometime," Adolin said.
"If you watch them from the right angles, it looks like the water is flowing down along the tiers, then somehow right up onto the top again." As they walked, she had to step over a dead mink, sticking half out of a broken tree trunk. Not the most romantic of strolls, but it was good to hold on to Adolin's arm, even if he had to wear a false face.
"Hey," Adolin said, "I didn't get to look through the sketchbook. You said you were going to show me."
"I brought the wrong one, remember? I had to carve on the table." She grinned. "Don't think I missed you going up and paying for the damage when I wasn't looking." He grunted. "People carve on bar tables. It happens all the time."
"Sure. Sure. It was a good carving, too."
"And you still think I shouldn't have done it?" She squeezed his arm. "Oh, Adolin Colin, you are your father's son. I won't do it again, all right?" He was blushing.
"I," he said, "was promised sketches. I don't care if it's the wrong sketchbook. I feel like I haven't seen any of your pictures for ages."
"There's nothing good in this one," she said, digging in her satchel. "I've been distracted lately." He still made her hand it over, and secretly she was pleased. He started flipping through the more recent pictures, and though he noted the ones of strange Spren, he idled most on the sketches of refugees she'd done for her collection. A mother with her daughter, sitting in shadow, but with her face looking toward the horizon and the hints of a rising sun. A thick-knuckled man sweeping the area around his pallet on the street. A young woman, light-eyed and hanging out a window, hair drifting free, wearing only a nightgown, with her hand tied in a pouch.
"Shallan," he said, "these are amazing. Some of the best work you've ever done."
"They're just quick sketches, Adolin."
"They're beautiful," he said, looking at another where he stopped. It was a picture of him in one of his new suits.
Shallan blushed. "Forgot that was there," she said, trying to get the sketchbook back. He lingered on the picture, then finally succumbed to her prodding and handed it back. She let out a sigh of relief. It wasn't that she'd be embarrassed if he saw the sketch of Kaladin on the next page. She did sketches of all kinds of people. But best to end on the picture of Adolin. Vale had been seeping through on that other one.
"You're getting better, if that's possible."
"Maybe. Though I don't know how much I can credit myself with the progress. Words of Radiance says that a lot of Lightweavers were artists."
"So the Order recruited people like you."
"Or the surge binding made them better at sketching, giving them an unfair advantage over other artists."
"I have an unfair advantage over other duelists. I have had the finest training since childhood. I was born strong and healthy, and my father's wealth gave me some of the best sparring partners in the world." My build gives me reach over other men. Does that mean I don't deserve accolades when I win?
You don't have supernatural help.
You still had to work hard. I know you did.
He put his arm around her, pulling her closer as they walked. Other Alethi couples kept their distance in public, but Adolin had been raised by a mother with a fondness for hugs.
You know, there's this thing my father complains about. He asked what the use of shard blades was.
I think they're pretty obviously for cutting people up. Without cutting them, actually.
But why only swords?
Father asks why the ancient Radiants never made tools for the people.
He squeezed her shoulder. I love that your powers make you a better artist, Shallan. Father was wrong. The Radiants weren't just soldiers. Yes, they created incredible weapons, but they also created incredible art. And maybe, once this war is done, we can find other uses for their powers.
Storms, his enthusiasm could be intoxicating. As they walked toward the tailor's shop, she was loath to part with him, though Vale did need to get on with her day's work. I can be anyone, Shallan thought, noticing a few joyspren blowing past, like a swirl of blue leaves. I can become anything. Adolin deserved someone far better than her. Could she become that someone? Craft for him the perfect bride? A woman that looked and acted as befitted Adolin Colin? It wouldn't be her. The real her was a bruised and sorry thing, painted up all pretty but inside a horrid mess. She already put a face over that for him. Why not go a few steps farther? Radiant. Radiant could be his perfect bride, and she did like him. The thought made Shallan feel cold inside. Once they were close enough to the tailor's shop that she didn't worry about him being safe as he walked back on his own, Shallan forced herself to pull out of his grip. She held his hand a moment with her free hand. I need to be going.
You aren't to meet the cult until sunset.
I need to steal some food first to pay them.
Still, he held to her hand. What do you do out there, Shallan? Who do you become?
Everyone, she said. Then she reached up and kissed him on the cheek. Thank you for being you, Adolin.
Everyone else was taken already, he mumbled.
Never stopped me.
He watched her until she ducked around a corner, heart thumping.
Adolin Colin in her life was like a warm sunrise.
Vale started to seep out, and she was forced to acknowledge that sometimes she preferred the storm and the rain to the sun. She checked at the drop point, inside a corner of a building that was now rubble. Here, Red had deposited a pack that contained Vale's outfit. She grabbed it and went hunting a good place to change. The end of the world had come, but that seemed most true after a storm. Refuse strewn about. People who hadn't gotten to shelters moaning from fallen shacks or alongside streets. It was like each storm tried to wipe them off Roshar, and they only remained through sheer grit and luck. Now with two storms it was even worse. If they defeated the Voidbringers, would the Everstorm remain? Had it begun to erode their society in a way that, win the war or not, would eventually end with them all swept out to sea? She felt her face changing as she walked, draining stormlight from her satchel. It rose in her like a flaring flame, before dimming to an ember as she became the people from the sketches Adolin had seen. The poor man, who tried doggedly to keep the area around his little palette clean, as if to try to maintain some control over an insane world. The light-eyed girl who wondered what had happened to the joy of adolescence. Instead of her wearing her first hava to a ball, her family was forced to take in dozens of relatives from neighboring towns, and she spent the days locked away because the streets weren't safe. The mother with a child, sitting in darkness, looking toward the horizon and a hidden sun. face after face, life after life, overpowering, intoxicating, alive, breathing and crying and laughing and being. So many hopes, so many lives, so many dreams.
She unbuttoned her hava up the side, then let it fall. She dropped her satchel, which thumped from the heavy book inside. She stepped forward in only her shift, safe hand uncovered, feeling the wind on her skin. She was still wearing an illusion, one that didn't disrobe, so nobody could see her.
Nobody could see her. Had anyone ever seen her?
She stopped on the street corner, wearing shifting faces and clothing, enjoying the sensation of freedom, clothed yet naked skin shivering at the wind's kiss. Around her, people ducked away into buildings, frightened.
Just another spren, Shallan Vale radiant thought. That's what I am. Emotion made carnal.
She lifted her hands to the sides, exposed yet invisible. She breathed the breaths of a city's people. Pattern said, unweaving himself from her discarded dress.
Shallan?
Maybe, she said, lingering.
Finally, she let herself slip fully into Vale's persona. She immediately shook her head and fetched the clothing and satchel. She was lucky it hadn't been stolen. Foolish girl. They didn't have time for prancing around from poem to poem. Vale found a secluded location beside a large, gnarled tree whose roots spread all the way along the wall in either direction. She quickly rearranged her underclothing, then put on her trousers and did up her shirt. She pulled on her hat, checked herself in a hand mirror, then nodded.
Right then. Time to meet up with Vatha.
He was waiting at the inn where Wit had once stayed. Radiant retained hope that she'd meet him again there, for a more thorough interrogation. In the private room, away from the eyes of the fretting innkeeper, Vatha laid out a couple of spheres to light the maps he'd purchased. They detailed the manor she intended to hit this afternoon.
"They call it the mausoleum," Vatha explained as Vale sat.
He showed her an artist's sketch he'd purchased, which was of the building's grand hall.
"Those statues are all soul cast, by the way. They're favored servants of the house, turned to storming stone.
It's a sign of honor and respect among light eyes."
"It's creepy," Vatha said. "When I die, burn my corpse up right good. Don't leave me staring for eternity while your descendants sip their tea."
Vale nodded absently, placing Shallan's sketchbook on the table.
"Pick an alias from this. This map says the larder is on the outside wall. Time is tight, so we might want to do this one the easy way. Have Red make a distraction, then use Shallan's blade to cut us an opening right into the food."
"You know, they're said to have quite the fortune at the mausoleum. The Tenet family riches are..."
He trailed off as he saw her expression.
"No riches, then.
We get the food to pay the cult. Then we get out."
"Fine."
He settled on the image of the man sweeping around his palate, staring at it.
"You know, when you reformed me from banditry, I figured I was done with stealing.
This is different."
"Different how? We stole mostly food back then, too, Brightness. Just wanted to stay alive and forget."
"And do you still want to forget?" He grunted.
"Nah, I suppose I don't. Suppose I sleep a little better now at night, don't I?"
The door opened and the innkeeper bustled in, holding drinks. Vatha yelped, though Vale turned with a droll expression.
"I believe," she said, "I wanted to not be interrupted."
"I brought drinks!"
"Which is an interruption," Vale said, pointing out the door.
"If we're thirsty, we'll ask."
The innkeeper grumbled, then backed out the door, carrying his tray.
"He's suspicious," Vale thought.
"He thinks we were up to something with Wit, and wants to find out what. Time to move these meetings to another location, eh, Vatha? She looked back at the table and found someone else sitting there. Vatha was gone, replaced by a bald man with thick knuckles and a well-kept smock. Shallan glanced at the picture on the table, then at the drained sphere beside it, then back at Vatha. "Nice," she said. "But you forgot to do the back of the head, the part not in the drawing."
"What?"
Vatha asked, frowning. She showed him the hand mirror.
"Why'd you put his face on me?"
"I didn't," Vale said, standing. "You panicked, and this happened." Vatha prodded at his face, still looking in the mirror, confused. "I'll bet the first few times are always accidents," Vale said. She tucked the mirror away. "Gather this stuff up. We'll do the mission as planned, but tomorrow you're relieved of infiltration duty. I'll want you practicing with your stormlight instead."
"Practicing?"
He finally seemed to get it, his brown eyes opening widely.
"Brightness? I'm no storming radiant."
"Of course not. You're probably a squire. I think most orders had them. You might become something more. I think Shallan was making illusions off and on for years before she said the oaths. But then it's all kind of muddled in her head. I had my sword when I was very young, and..." She took a deep breath. Fortunately, Vale hadn't lived through those days. Pattern hummed in warning.
"Brightness," Vatha said. "Vale, you really think that I..."
"Storms?" He seemed like he was going to cry. She patted him on the shoulder. "We don't have time to waste. The cult will be waiting for me in 4 hours and expect a nice payment of food. You going to be all right?"
"Sure, sure," he said.
The illusion finally dropped, and the image of Vatha himself so emotional was even more striking.
"I can do this. Let's go steal from some rich people and give to some crazy people instead."
78. The Revel. A coalition has been formed among Scholar Radiants. Our goal is to deny the enemy their supply of void light. This will prevent their continuing transformations and give us an edge in combat. From Drawer 3020, Second Emerald. Vale had exposed herself. That nagged at her as the wagon, filled with spoils from the robbery, rolled toward the appointed meeting place with the cult. She nestled in the back, against a bag of grain, feet up on a paper-wrapped haunch of cured pork. Swiftspren was Vale, as she was the one who had been seen distributing the food. Therefore, to enter this revel, she would have to go as herself. The enemy knew what she looked like. Should she have created a new persona, a false face, to not expose Vale? "But Vale is a false face," a part of her said. "You could always abandon her." She strangled that part of her, smothered it deep. Vale was too real, too vital to abandon. Shallan would be easier. First moon was up by the time they reached the steps to the Oathgate platform. Vatha rolled the wagon into place and Vale hopped off, coat rippling around her. Two guards here were dressed as flame spren, with golden and red tassels. Their muscular builds and those two spears set near the steps hinted these men might have been soldiers before joining the cult. A woman bustled between them, wearing a flat white mask with eye holes but no mouth or other features. Vale narrowed her eyes. The mask reminded her of Iyatil, Marais's master in the Ghost Bloods, but it was a very different shape.
"You were told to come alone, Swiftspren," the woman said.
"You expected me to unload all of this on my own?" Vale waved to the back of the wagon.
"We can handle it," the woman said smoothly, stepping over as one of the guards held up a torch, not a sphere lamp, and the other lowered the wagon's tailgate.
Vale turned sharply. That hum. The guards started unloading the food.
You can take all but the two bags marked with red, Vale said, pointing. I need those for my rounds visiting the poor.
I wasn't aware this was a negotiation, the cultist said. You asked for this. You've been leaving whispers through the city that you want to join the revel.
Wits work, apparently. She'd have to thank him. Why are you here? The cultist asked, sounding curious.
What is it you want, Swift Spren, so-called hero of the markets?
I just keep hearing this voice. It says that this is the end, that I should give in to it, embrace the time of Spren.
She turned toward the Oathgate platform. An orange glow was rising from the top.
The answers are up there, aren't they?
From the corner of her eye, she saw the three nod to one another. She'd passed some kind of test.
You may climb the steps to enlightenment, the cultist in white told her. Your guide will meet you at the top.
She tossed her hat to Vatha and met his eyes. Once the unloading was through, he'd pull away and set up a few streets farther off, where he could watch the edge of the Oathgate platform. If she had trouble, she would throw herself off, counting on Stormlight to heal her after falling. She started up the steps.
Kaladin normally liked the feeling of the city after a storm. Clean and fresh, washed of grime and refuse. He'd done evening patrol, checking over their beat to see everything was all right following the storm. Now he stood on top of the wall, waiting for the rest of his squad, who were still stowing their equipment. The sun had barely set, and it was time for dinner. Below, he picked out buildings newly scarred from lightning strikes. A pod of corrupted windspren danced past, trailing intense red light. Even the smell of the air was wrong somehow, moldy and sodden. Syl sat quietly on his shoulder until Beard and the others piled into the stairwell. He finally joined them, walking down below to the barrack where both platoons, his and the one they shared the space with, were gathering for dinner. Roughly 20 of the men from the other platoon would be on wall duty tonight, but everyone else was present. Not long after Kaladin arrived, the two platoon captains called their men to muster. Kaladin fell into line between Beard and Ved, and together they saluted as Azure stepped into the doorway. She was arrayed for battle, as always, with her breastplate, chain, and cloak. Tonight, she decided to do a formal inspection. Kaladin held attention with the others as she walked down their lines and commented quietly to the two captains. She looked over a few swords and asked several of the men if they needed anything. Kaladin felt as if he'd stood in similar lines 100 times, sweating and hoping that the general would find everything in order. They always did. This wasn't the type of inspection that was intended to actually find problems. This was a chance for the men to show off for their High Marshal. They swelled as she told them they just might be the finest platoons of fighting men I have ever had the privilege of leading. Kaladin was certain he'd heard those exact words from Amaram. Trite or not, the words inspired the men. They gave the High Marshal shouts of approval once they were given leave to break ranks. Perhaps the number of finest platoons in the army went up during times of war, when everyone craved a morale boost. Kaladin walked to the officer's table. It hadn't taken much work to get himself invited to dine with the High Marshal. Noro really wanted him promoted to lieutenant, and most of the others were too intimidated by Azure to sit at her table. The High Marshal hung her cloak and strange sword on a peg. She kept her gloves on, and though he couldn't see her chest because of the breastplate, that face and build were obviously female. She was also very Alethi, with the skin tone and hair, her eyes a glimmering light orange. She must have spent time as a mercenary out west, Kaladin thought. Sigzil had once told him that women fought in the west, particularly among mercenaries. The meal was simple curried grain. Kaladin took a bite, well acquainted by now with the aftertaste of soul-cast grain. A lingering staleness. The curry helped, but the cooks had used the boiled-off starch of the grain to thicken it, so it had some of the same flavor. He'd been placed relatively far from the center of the table, where Azure conversed with the two platoon captains. Eventually, one excused himself to use the privy. Kaladin thought for a moment, then picked up his plate and moved down the table to settle into the open spot.
Vale reached the top of the platform, entering what felt like a little village. The monastery structures here were much smaller, yet far nicer than the ones on the shattered plains had been. A cluster of fine stonework structures, with slanted wedge-shaped roofs, the points toward the origin. Ornamental shale bark grew around the bases of most of the buildings, cultivated and carved into swirling patterns. Vale took a memory for Shallan, but her focus was on the firelight coming from farther inward. She couldn't see the control building. All of these other structures were in the way. She could see the palace, off to her left, glowing in the night with windows lit. It connected to the Oathgate platform by a covered walkway called the Sunwalk. A small group of soldiers, visible in the darkness only as shadows, guarded the way across. Close to her, at the top of the steps, a rotund man sat along a shale-bark ridge. He had short hair and light green eyes, and gave her an affable grin.
"Welcome. I'm your guide tonight, for your first time at the revel. It can be, disorienting."
"Those are ardent robes," Vale noted, ripped, stained from what appeared to be a variety of foods.
"Everyone who comes up here," he said, hopping off his seat, "is reborn. Your name is now,
he pulled a piece of paper from his pocket.
"Where did I write that? Well, suppose it isn't important. Your name is Kishi. Doesn't that sound nice? Good job getting up here. This is where you'll find the real fun in the city."
He shoved his hands back in his pockets and looked down one of the roadways. Then his shoulders slumped.
"Anyway," he said, "let's get going. Lots of reveling to do tonight. Always so much reveling to be done."
"And you are?"
"Me? Harat is what they named me. I think? I forget."
He ambled forward without waiting to see if she followed. She did, eager to get to the center. However, just past the first building, she reached the revel and had to stop to take it in. A bonfire burned right on the ground, flames crackling and whipping in the wind, bathing Vale in heat. Corrupted flame spren, vivid blue and somehow more jagged, danced inside of it. Tables lined the walkway here, piled with food. Candied meats, stacks of flatbread crusted with sugar, fruits, and pastries. A variety of people passed by, occasionally scooping food off the tables with their bare hands. They laughed and shouted. Many had been ardents, marked by brown robes. Others were light eyes, though their clothing had decayed. It seemed a fitting word for these suits with missing jackets, hava dresses whose skirts were ragged from brushing the ground, safehand sleeves ripped off at the shoulder and discarded somewhere. They moved like fish in a school, flowing from right to left. She picked out soldiers, both light-eyed and dark, in the remnants of uniforms. They seemed to take no note of her, or of Harat, standing to the side. She'd have to cut through the stream of people to get farther inward to the Oathgate control building. She started to do so, but Harat took her by the arm, steering her to join the flow of people.
"We have to stay to the outer ring," he said. "No going inward for us. Nope. Be happy. You get to enjoy the end of the world in style."
She reluctantly let herself be pulled along. It was probably best to do a round of the platform anyway. However, not long after starting, she began to hear the voice. "Let go. Give up your pain. Feast. Indulge. Embrace the end." Pattern hummed on her coat, his sound lost to the many people laughing and drinking. Harat stuck his fingers into some kind of creamy dessert, taking it by the handful. His eyes had glazed over, and he muttered to himself as he pushed the food into his mouth. Though others laughed and even danced, most showed that same glassy look. She could feel Pattern's vibrations on her coat. It seemed to counteract the voices, clearing her head. Harat handed her a cup of wine he'd scooped from a table. Who set this all up? Where were the servants? There was just so much food. Tables and tables of it. People moved in buildings they passed, engaging in other carnal delights. Vale tried to slip across the stream of revelers, but Harat kept hold of her. "Everyone wants to go inward their first time," he said. "You aren't allowed. Enjoy this. Enjoy the feeling. It's not our fault, right? We didn't fail her. We were only doing what she asked. Don't cause a storm, girl. Nobody wants that." He hung on to Vale's arm. So instead she waited until they passed another building and tugged him that way. "Going to find a partner?" he asked, numb. "Sure, that's allowed. Assuming you can find anyone still sober enough to care." They entered the building, which had once been a place for meditation, filled with individual rooms. It smelled sharply of incense, and each alcove had its own brazier for burning prayers. Those were now occupied for another sort of experience. "I just want to rest a moment," she told Harat, peeking into an empty room. It had a window. She could slip out that, maybe. "It's all so overwhelming." "Oh." He looked over his shoulder toward the revel passing outside. His left hand was still coated with sweet paste. Vale stepped into the chamber. When he tried to follow, she said, "I need a moment alone." "I'm supposed to keep watch on you," he said, and prevented her from closing the door. "Then watch," she said, and settled down on the bench inside the cell, from a distance. He sighed and sat down on the floor of the hallway. "Now what?" "A new face," she thought. "What did he name me?" "Kishi." It meant mystery. She used a memory she'd drawn earlier in the day, that of a woman from the market. In her mind, Shallan added touches to the clothing. A hava, ragged like the others. An exposed safe hand. It would do. She wished she could sketch it, but she could make this work. Now what to do about her guard? "He probably hears voices," she thought. "I can use that." She pressed her hand to Pattern and wove sound. "Go," she whispered. "Hang on the wall of the hallway outside next to him." Pattern softly hummed his reply. She closed her eyes and could faintly hear the words she'd woven to be whispered near Harat. "Indulge. Get something to drink. Join the revel."
"You going to just sit there?" Harat called into her.
"Yes."
"I'm going to get something to drink. Don't leave."
"Fine." He rose, then jogged out. By the time he got back, she had attached an illusion of Vale to a ruby mark, then left it there. It showed Vale resting on the bench, eyes closed, snoring softly. Kishi passed Harat in the hallway, stepping with glassy eyes. He didn't spare her a second glance, and instead settled down in the hallway with a large cup of wine to watch Vale. Kishi joined the revel outside. A man there laughed and grabbed at her safe hand, as if to pull her toward one of the rooms. Kishi dodged him and slipped farther inward, flowing through the stream of people. This outer ring seemed to round the entire Oathgate platform. The secrets were farther toward the center. Nobody forbade Kishi as she left the flow of the outer ring, stepping between two buildings, heading inward.
The others stopped their small talk, and the officer's table grew very still as Kaladin settled down across from Azure. The High Marshal laced her gloved hands before herself. cow, is it? She said. The light-eyed man with slave brands. How are you finding your time in the Wall Guard? It's a well-run army, sir, and strangely welcoming of one such as myself. He then nodded over the High Marshal's shoulder. I've never seen someone treat a shard blade so casually. You just hang it on a peg? The others at the table watched with obviously held breaths. I'm not particularly worried about anyone taking her, Azure said. I trust these men. It's still remarkable, Kaladin said. Foolhardy, even. Across the table, two places down from Azure, Lieutenant Noro raised his hands silently toward Kaladin in a pleading way. Don't screw this up, Cal. But Azure smiled. I never did get an explanation for that Shashbrand soldier. I never gave a proper one, sir, Kaladin said. I'm not fond of the memories that earned me the scar. How did you end up in this city? Azure asked. Sarius's lands are far to the north. There are several armies of Voidbringers between here and there, by report. I flew. How about you, sir? You couldn't have been in the city long before the siege began. Nobody talks of you earlier than that time. They say you appeared right when the guard needed you. Perhaps I was always here, but merely blended in. With those scars? They may not spell out danger as explicitly as mine, but they'd have been memorable. The rest of the table, lieutenants and the platoon captain, stared at Kaladin slack-jawed. Perhaps he was pushing too hard, acting too far above his station. He'd never been good at acting his station, though. Perhaps, Azure said, one shouldn't be questioning my arrival. Be thankful someone was here when the city needed them. I am thankful, Kaladin said. Your reputation with these men commends you, Azure, and extreme times can excuse a great deal. Eventually, though, you'll need to come clean. These men deserve to know who, exactly, is commanding them. And what about you, Cal? She took a spoonful of curry and rice, men's food, which she ate with gusto. Do they deserve to know your past? Shouldn't you come clean? Perhaps. I am your commanding officer, you realize. You should answer me when I ask questions. I've given answers, Kaladin said. If they aren't the ones you want, then perhaps your questions aren't very good. Noro gasped audibly. And you, Cal, you make statements dripping with implications. You want answers? Why not just ask? Storms, she was right. He'd been dancing around serious questions. Kaladin looked her in the eyes. Why won't you let anyone talk about the fact that you're a woman, Azure? Noro, don't faint. You'll embarrass us all. The lieutenant thumped his forehead against the table, groaning softly. The captain lord, with whom Kaladin hadn't interacted much, had gone red-faced. They came up with this game on their own, Azure said. They're a Lethi, so they need an excuse for why they're listening to a woman giving military orders. Pretending there's some mystery focuses them on that, instead of on masculine pride. I find the entire thing silly. She leaned forward. Tell me honestly, did you come here chasing me? Chasing you? Kaladin cocked his head. Drums sounded in the near distance. It took a moment for them, even Kaladin, to register what that meant. Then Kaladin and Azure threw themselves back from the bench at nearly the same time. To arms! Kaladin shouted. There's an attack on the wall!
The next ring inward on the Oathgate platform was filled with people crawling. Kishi stood at the perimeter, watching a multitude of men and women in ragged finery crawl past her, giggling, moaning, or gasping. Each seemed in the thrall of a different emotion, and each stared with an openly maddened expression. She thought she recognized a few from the descriptions of Light Eyes who had disappeared into the palace, though in their state, it was hard to tell. A woman with long hair dragging on the ground looked toward her, grinning with clenched teeth and bleeding gums. She crawled, one hand after another, her hava shredded, faded. She was followed by a man wearing rings glowing with stormlight, in contrast to his ripped clothing. He giggled incessantly. The food on the tables here rotted and was infested with decay spren. Kishi wavered at the edge of the ring. She should have kept to the outer ring. She didn't belong here. There was food aplenty behind her, laughter and reveling. It seemed to pull her back, inviting her to join the eternal beautiful walk. Within that ring, time wouldn't matter. She could forget Shallan and what she'd done. Just give in. Pattern hummed. Vale gasped, letting Kishi burst from her, light-weaving collapsing. Storms. She had to be away from this place. It was doing things to her brain, strange things, even for her. Not yet. She pulled her coat tight, then picked her way across the street full of crawling people. No bonfire lit her way, only the moon overhead and the light of the jewelry the people wore. Storms. Where had they all gone for the storm? Their moaning, chittering, and babbling chased her as she crossed the street, then hurried down a dark pathway between two monastery buildings, inward, toward the control building, which should be right ahead. The voices in her head combined from whispers to a kind of surging rhythm, a thumping of impressions, followed by a pause, followed by another surge, almost like... She stepped between the buildings and entered a moonlit square, colored violet from Salus above. Instead of the control building, she found an overgrown mass. Something had covered the entire structure, like the Midnight Mother had enveloped the gemstone pillar beneath Urethiru. The dark mass pulsed and throbbed. Black veins as thick as a man's leg ran from it and melded with the ground nearby. A heart. It beat an irregular rhythm. Bum-ba-ba-bum, instead of the common ba-bum of her own heartbeat. Give in. Join the revel. Shallan, listen to me. She shook herself. That last voice had been different. She'd heard it before, hadn't she? She looked to the side and found her shadow on the ground, pointed the wrong way, toward the moonlight instead of away from it. The shadow crept up the wall, with eyes that were white holes, glowing faintly. I'm not your enemy, but the heart is a trap. Take caution. Distantly, drums started sounding on the top of the wall. The void bringers were attacking. It all threatened to overwhelm her. The thumping heart, the strange processions in rings around it, the drums and the panic that the fused were coming for her because she'd been seen. Vale seized control. She'd accomplished her goal, she'd scouted the area, and she had information about the Oath Gate. It was time to get out. She turned and forcibly put on Kishi's face. She crossed the stream of crawling, moaning people. She flowed back into the outer ring of revelers before slipping out. She didn't check on her guide. She walked to the rim of the Oath Gate platform and, without a look back, leaped off.
79. Echoes of Thunder. A revelation is fueled by the theory that the unmade can perhaps be captured like ordinary spren. It would require a special prison. And Malishi. From Drawer 3020, Third Emerald. Kaladin charged up the stairwell beside High Marshal Azure, the sound of drums breaking the air like echoes of thunder from the departed storm. He counted the beats. Storms, that's my section under assault. Damnation, these creatures, Azure muttered. I'm missing something. Like white on black. She glanced at Kaladin. Just tell me, who are you? Who are you? The two burst out of the stairwell onto the wall's top, entering a scene of chaos. The soldiers on duty had lit the enormous oil lamps on the tops of the towers, giving light to the dark walls. Fused swooped between them, trailing dark violet light, attacking with long, bloodied lances. Men lay screaming on the ground or huddled in pairs, holding up shields as if trying to hide from the nightmares above. Kaladin and Azure exchanged a look, then nodded to one another. Later. She broke left and Kaladin dashed right, shouting for men to form up. Syl spun around his head, concerned, anxious. Kaladin scooped a shield off the ground and seized a soldier by the arm, towing him around and locking shields. A swooping lance clanged off the metal, sending a jolt through Kaladin. The Voidbringer flew past. Pained, Kaladin ignored the wounded and bleeding who crawled with corrupted pain spren. He pulled the scattered remnants of the 8th platoon back together while his own men stumbled to a halt outside the stairwell. These were their friends, the people with whom they shared a barrack. "To your right and up!" Syl shouted. Kaladin set himself and used his shield to push aside the lance of a Voidbringer who soared past. A second Voidbringer followed, wearing a long skirt of rippling crimson cloth. The way she flew was almost mesmerizing. Right up until her lance pinned Captain Didanor against the wall's battlements, then lifted him and tossed him over. He screamed as he plummeted toward the ground below. Kaladin almost broke rank and ran for him, but held himself in line by force. He reached by instinct for the stormlight in his pouch, but held himself back. Using it for lashing would attract screamers, and in this darkness even drawing in a small amount would reveal him for what he was. The fused would all attack him together. He would risk undermining the mission to save the entire city. Today, he protected best through discipline, order, and keeping a level head.
"Squads 1 and 2, with me!" he shouted. "Vardanar, you've got 5 and 6. Have your men hand out pikes, then grab bows and get to the tower's top. Noru, take squads 3 and 4 and set up on the wall walk just past the tower. My men will hold here on this side. Go, go!"
Nobody voiced a complaint as they scrambled to do as he said. Kaladin heard shouts from the High Marshal farther down the wall, but didn't have a chance to see how she was doing. As his two squads finally got a proper shield wall mounted, a human corpse slammed down onto the wall walk nearby. It had been dropped from very high up, or perhaps it had been lashed into the sky and had only now fallen. Most of the wounded men were archers from the 8th platoon. It looked like they'd been swept from the top of the tower. "We can't fight these things," Kaladin thought. The Voidbringers attacked in sweeping dives, coming in from all directions. It was impossible to maintain a normal formation beneath that assault. Syl shifted into the shape of a girl and looked at him questioningly. He shook his head. He could fight without stormlight. He'd protected people long before he could fly. He started to call out orders, but a fused passed by, slapping at their pikes with a large shield. Before the men could get them reoriented, another crashed down into the center of them, sending soldiers stumbling. A violet glow steamed from the creature's body as it swept around with its lance, wielding it like an oversized staff. Kaladin ducked by instinct, trying to maneuver his pike. The fused grinned as the formation disintegrated. It was male, reminiscent of a Parshendi, with layered plates of chitin armor creeping down across its forehead and rising from cheeks that were marbled black and red. Kaladin leveled his pike, but the creature lunged along it and pressed its hand against Kaladin's chest. He felt himself grow lighter, but also suddenly begin to fall backward. The creature had lashed him. Kaladin fell back, like he was toppling off a ledge, falling along the wall toward a group of his men. The fused wanted Kaladin to crash into them, but it had made a mistake. The sky was his. Kaladin responded immediately to the lashing and reoriented himself in the blink of an eye. Down became the direction he was falling, along the walkway, toward the towering guard post. His men seemed to be stuck to the side of a cliff, turning toward him, horrified. Kaladin was able to shove against the stone with the end of his pike, moving him to the side as he whooshed past his men instead of crashing into them. Syl joined him as a ribbon, and he twisted, falling feet first along the walkway toward the guard tower below. He was able to nudge himself so he fell right into the open doorway. He dropped the pike, then caught the lip of the doorway as he passed through it. He stopped with a jarring lurch, arms protesting with pain. But that maneuver slowed him enough. When he swung and let go, he dropped through the room, past the dining table, which seemed glued to the wall, and landed on the opposite wall, inside the building. He stepped over to the other doorway, which looked out onto the walk where he'd positioned Noro's squad. Beard and Ved held pikes toward the sky, looking anxious.
Kaladin, Syl said. Above!
He looked upward and out the doorway he'd come through. The Voidbringer who had lashed him came soaring downward, carrying a lance. It curved to bypass the tower, preparing to whip around and attack Beard and the men on the other side. Kaladin growled and dashed along the inside wall of the tower, pulled himself up past the table, then hurled himself out a window. He crashed into the Voidbringer in midair, shoving the creature's lance to the side.
"Leave my men alone!"
Kaladin clung to the clothing of the monster, spinning in the air dozens of feet above the dark city, sparkling with the light of spheres in windows or lanterns. The Voidbringer lashed them higher, falsely assuming that the more height it had, the more advantage it would gain over Kaladin. Holding tightly with his left hand, wind whipping around them, Kaladin reached out with his right hand and summoned Syl as a long knife. She appeared immediately, and Kaladin shoved the diminutive shard blade into the creature's stomach. The Voidbringer grunted and looked at him with deep, glowing red eyes. It dropped its lance and began to claw at Kaladin while spinning itself in the air, trying to throw him free.
"They can survive wounds," Kaladin thought, gritting his teeth as the thing gripped at his neck. "Like radiance. That void light sustains them."
Kaladin still refrained from drawing in his own stormlight. He suffered the fused's lashings as it spun them in the air, shouting in a language Kaladin didn't understand. He tried to maneuver the shard knife and cut the thing's spine. The weapon was insanely sharp, but for the moment, leverage and disorientation were bigger factors. The Voidbringer grunted, then lashed itself, with Kaladin hanging on, back downward toward the wall. They fell quickly, a double or triple lashing, spiraling and screaming toward the wall walk.
"Kaladin!" Syl's voice in his head. "I sense something. Something about its power. Cut upward. Toward the heart."
The city, the battle, the sky, all became a blur. Kaladin forced his blade farther into the creature's chest, pushing it upward, seeking... The shard knife struck something brittle and hard. The fused red's eyes winked out. Kaladin twisted, putting the corpse beneath him in the wall walk. They hit hard, and he bounced off the corpse, then hit the stones with a crack. He groaned, eyes flashing with pain, and was forced, by instinct, to take in a breath of stormlight to heal the damage of the fall. That light flowed through him, re-knitting bones, repairing organs. It was used up in a moment, and he forced himself not to draw in more, instead pushing himself up and shaking his head. The Voidbringer stared sightlessly from the wall walk beside him. It was dead. Ahead, the other fused began streaking away in retreat, leaving a broken and battered group of guards. Kaladin stumbled to his feet. His section of the wall was empty, save for the dead and the dying. He didn't recognize any. He'd hit the wall some 50 feet away from his platoon's position. Syl landed on his shoulder and patted him on the side of the head. Painspren littered the wall, crawling this way and that in the shape of hands without skin. "This city is doomed," Kaladin thought as he knelt by one of the wounded and quickly prepared a bandage by slicing up a fallen cloak. "Storms. We might all be doomed. We're not anywhere near ready to fight these things." It looked like Noro's squad, at least, had survived. They jogged down the wall and gathered around the Voidbringer Kaladin had killed, nudging it with the butts of their pikes. Kaladin tied off a tourniquet, then moved to another man whose head he wrapped. Soon army surgeons flooded the wall. Kaladin stepped back, bloodied, but more angry than tired. He turned to Noro, Beard, and the others who had gathered around him.
"You killed one," Beard said, feeling at his arm with the empty glyph ward. "Storms. You actually killed one, Cal."
"How many have you brought down?"
Kaladin asked, realizing that he'd never asked. "How many has the wall guard killed during the assaults these last weeks?" His men shared glances.
"Azure drove a few off," Noro said. "They're afraid of her shard blade. But as for Voidbringers killed, this would be the first, Cal."
Storms.
Even worse, the one he'd killed would be reborn. Unless the Heralds set up their prison again, Kaladin couldn't ever really kill one of the fused.
"I need to talk to Azure," he said, striding down the wall walk. "Noro, report."
"None fallen, sir. Though Vasilev took a gash to the chest. He's with the surgeons and should pull through."
"Good. Squad, you're with me."
He found Azure surveying the 8th Platoon's losses near their guard tower. She had her cloak off and held oddly in one hand wrapped around her forearm, with part of it draping down below. Her unsheathed shard blade glittered, long and silvery. Kaladin stepped up to her, the sleeve of his uniform stained dark with the blood of the Voidbringer he'd killed. Azure looked tired, and she gestured with her sword outward. "Have a look." Lights lit the horizon. Sphere lights. Thousands upon thousands of them. Far more than he'd seen on previous nights. They blanketed the landscape. "That's the entire enemy army," Azure said. "I'd bet my red life on it. Somehow they marched them through that storm earlier today. It won't be long now. They'll have to attack before the next high storm. A few days at most." "I need to know what's going on here, Azure," Kaladin said. "How are you getting food for this army?" She drew her lips to a line. "He killed one, High Marshal," Beard whispered from behind him. "Storms. He took one of them down. Grabbed on like he was mounting a storming horse, and then rode the bastard through the sky." The woman studied him, and reluctantly Kaladin summoned Syl as a shard blade. Noro's eyes bulged and Ved nearly fainted, though Beard just grinned. "I'm here," Kaladin said, resting the Syl blade on his shoulder. "On orders from King Elokar and the Blackthorn. It's my job to save Kolinar, and it's time you started talking to me." She smiled at him. "Come with me."
80. Oblivious. Ba-Ado Mishram has somehow connected with the Parsh people, as Odium once did. She provides void light and facilitates forms of power. Our strike team is going to imprison her. From drawer 3020, Fourth Emerald. Grund wasn't at his normal spot, inside the corner of the broken shop. The place hadn't fared well during the Everstorm. The ceiling was sagging even more, and a snarl of tree branches had been blown in through the window, littering the floor. Vale frowned, calling his name. After fleeing the Oathgate platform, she'd met up with Vatha, who had been waiting as instructed. She'd sent Vatha back to report to the king, and probably should have gone herself. But she hadn't been able to shake the eerie disquiet of her trip through the revel. Going back home would have left her too much time to think. Vale wanted to be out working instead. Monsters and Voidbringers were something she couldn't comprehend, but starving children, she could do something about that. She'd taken the two remaining sacks of food and gone to help the city's people. If she could find them. "Grund," Vale repeated, leaning farther in through the window. Before, he'd always been up at this time. Perhaps he'd finally moved out of the building like all the others had. Or maybe he hadn't gotten back from the storm shelter yet, following the Everstorm. She turned to leave, but Grund finally stumbled into the room. The little urchin tucked his malformed hand into his pocket and scowled at her. That was odd. He normally seemed so happy when she arrived. "What's wrong?" she asked. "Nothing," he said. "Thought you were someone else." He gave her a grin. Vale fished a few pieces of flatbread from her bag. "Not much today, I'm afraid. I wanted to make sure to stop by, though. The information you gave us on that book was very helpful." He licked his lips, holding out his hands. She tossed him the flatbread, and he took an eager bite. "What do you need next?" "Nothing right now," Vale said. "Come on. There has to be something I can do to help. Something you want, right?" Too desperate, Vale thought. What is beneath the surface here? What have I missed? "I'll consider," she said. "Grund, is everything all right?"
"Right, sure. Everything is great."
He paused.
"Unless it shouldn't be."
Pattern hummed softly on Vale's coat. She agreed. "I'll stop by again in a few days. Should have a big haul then.
Vale tipped her hat to the urchin, then slipped back into the market. It was late, but people lingered. Nobody wanted to be alone on days after the Everstorm came. Some looked toward the wall where those fused had attacked. But that sort of thing happened almost daily, so it didn't cause too much of a stir. Vale drew more attention than she'd have wanted. She'd exposed herself to them, given up her face.
"Grund tells lies, doesn't he?"
Pattern whispered.
"Yeah, I'm not sure why, or what about."
As she wove into the market, she put her hand before her face, changing it with a wave of the fingers. She took her hat off, folded it, and covertly light-wove it to look like a waterskin. Each was a little change that nobody would notice. She tucked her hair into her coat, made it look shorter, then finally closed her coat and changed the clothing underneath. When she took off the coat and folded it up, she was no longer Vale, but a market guard she'd drawn earlier. Rolled coat under her arm, she lingered at a corner and waited to see if anyone passed, looking for Vale. She didn't spot anyone, though her training with Ishnat spotting tails wasn't yet extensive. She threaded her way back through the crowd to Grun's shop again. She lingered near the wall, then eased toward the window, listening.
"Told you we shouldn't have given her the book," a voice was saying inside. "This is pathetic," another said. "Pathetic. That was the best you could do?"
She heard a grunt and a whimper.
"That's Grund."
Vale cursed softly, scrambling around to look in through the window. A group of thugs was chewing on the flatbread she'd brought. Grund lay in the corner, whimpering and holding his stomach. Vale felt a flash of rage, and Angerspren immediately boiled around her, pools that sprayed red and orange. She shouted at the men and dashed for the doorway. They immediately scattered, though one slammed a cudgel onto Grund's head with a sickening crunch. By the time she reached Grund, the men had vanished farther into the building. She heard the door in the back slam closed. Pattern appeared in her hand as a shard blade, but Stormfather, she couldn't give chase, not and leave the poor child here. Vale dismissed Pattern and knelt, aghast at the bloody wound in Grund's head. It was bad. The skull was broken, bleeding. He blinked, dazed.
Vale?
"Storms, Grund," she whispered. What could she do?
"Help! Help somebody! There's a wounded child in here!"
Grund whimpered, then whispered something. Vale leaned close, feeling useless.
"Hate,"
Grund whispered.
"Hate you."
"It's all right," Vale said. "They're gone now. They ran. I'll help." "Bandage." She cut at her shirt tails with her knife.
"Hate you,"
Grund whispered. "It's me, Grund, not those others."
"Why couldn't you leave me alone?"
he whispered.
"They killed them all. My friends. Ty."
Vale pressed the cloth against his head wound and he winced. "Storms. Quiet. Don't exert yourself."
"Hate you,"
he repeated. "I brought you food, Grund."
"You drew them,"
he hissed.
"You strutted around throwing food. You thought people wouldn't notice?"
He closed his eyes.
"Had to sit all day, wait for you. My life was waiting for you. If I wasn't here when you came or if I tried to hide the food, they'd beat me."
"How long?" she whispered, feeling her confidence shake.
"Since the first day, you storming woman! Hate you. Others, too. We all hate you."
She sat with him as his breathing slowed, then cut off. Finally, she knelt back, bloodied cloth in her hands. Vale could handle this. She'd seen death. It was life on the street, and too much for one day. Shallan blinked tears from the corners of her eyes. Pattern hummed.
"Shallan," he said. "The boy. He spoke of the others." "Others?"
"Storms." She threw herself to her feet and pushed out into the night, dropping Vale's hat and coat in her haste. She ran for Muri, the mother who had once been a seamstress. Shallan shoved through the market until she reached the packed tenement where the seamstress lived. She crossed the common room, then breathed a sigh of relief as she found Muri alive inside her small room. The woman was hurriedly tossing clothing into a sack, her eldest daughter clutching a similar one. She looked up, saw Shallan, who still looked like Vale, and cursed to herself.
"You!"
The frown lines and scowl were unfamiliar. She'd always seemed so pleasant.
"You know already?" Shallan asked. "About Grund?"
"Grund?" Muri snapped.
"All I know is that the Grips are angry about something. I'm not going to take a chance."
"The Grips?"
"How oblivious are you, woman? The gang in charge of this area has had toughs watching us all for when you next arrived. The one watching me met with another and they had a quiet argument, then took off. I heard my name, so I'm leaving."
"They took the food I gave you, didn't they?"
"Storms, they killed Grund."
Muri stopped, then shook her head.
"Poor kid. Better you than he."
She cursed, gathering her sacks and shoving her children toward the common room.
"We always had to sit here waiting for you and your storming sack of goodies."
I'm sorry. Muri left into the night with her children. Shallan watched them go, feeling numb, empty. She quietly sank down in Muri's deserted room, still holding the cloth with Grund's blood.
81. Ithi and her sister. We are uncertain the effect this will have on the Parsh. At the very least, it should deny them forms of power. Melishi is confident, but Naze, daughter Kuzodo, warns of unintended side effects. From Drawer 3020, 5th Emerald. My name is